Remember, leadership that drives empowerment with the purpose of why have more sustainable growth and motivating the team than just telling them about what. And I would say one misperception of lean, when we talk in the context of manufacturing and operation, the perception is always about cost cutting. And it's not. Lean for me, it's about building that culture. And culture of what? Lean is a culture of problem solving and continuous improvement.
Welcome to KPI Fireside. Our mission is simple: to improve companies and to improve careers through continuous improvement. In every episode, we explore the spark, the moment, the mindset, or the method that ignites real change. Whether you're just starting out or leveling up, you'll find the insights and inspiration to fuel your next improvement. Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. I am your host, Keith Norris. Our guest today is Cindy D. Kit Wong. Cindy is a dynamic global sales and marketing executive with over 20 years experience driving growth across specialty chemicals, semiconductors, healthcare, packaging, and industrial markets. She has led international teams with hands-on experience in many countries: Japan, Germany, China, Singapore, Thailand, and Ireland. Cindy is recognized for aligning sales, marketing, and R&D to expand market share, accelerate adoption of advanced materials, and strengthen customer relationships. Her leadership style is engaging and empowering, balancing strategic clarity with decisive execution and measurable impact. Cindy, welcome to the podcast.
Very nice to meet you, Keith. I'm so happy and excited to be here.
Wonderful. Where are you located at geographically today?
I'm in Glastonbury, Connecticut. Lovely city and town.
Wonderful. We like Connecticut. We've got one of our associates is in Connecticut, so that's wonderful. So, Cindy, tell us just a little bit about who you are and what kind of work you do.
Sure. I've been in the industry over 20 plus years, and like you say, with the global experience, but most specifically is around the industry of B2B chemical industry. I recently joined Aperia under Andre Mader's leadership as a consultant and also heading marketing and innovation for Aperia as well. So long story short on that journey.
Yeah, Andreas was one of our previous podcast guests as well. Okay. So I forget what episode number he's on, but you can find him in the previous episodes there. That was a wonderful conversation. Andreas, a big fan of Demaic. I remember one of the things from his conversation was how to do Demaic in 15 minutes, which I think is pretty impressive. One of the things we like to start our podcast with is a little section we call the spark. And what I find, a lot of people that are involved in this discipline, there's usually like, I don't know, a moment in their story where they got turned on to this as something that's engaging and interesting. Do you remember in your journey what that spark was for you?
Yeah, especially when it's come to the context of continuous improvement, Lean Six Sigma, I have to go back all the way to my education. I have a chemical engineering by certification, education. And for some reason, it's embedded to the DNA. I don't know where to start, but it's just inside the DNA. You always want to see things better, faster, more effective and efficient. So it's in me already in there. And having, I'm from Thailand, and having the engineering, female engineering in my country, it's even more plus, because that continuous improvement is not just the operation and business. It's also overall with the society, how we make it a better place for us to work and live.
I have been to Thailand a couple of times. And as far as, there's all sorts of different stereotypes that get applied to different places and different countries. But I can say that the people that I met there were so pleasant and happy generally. Like seemed like a very pleasant and happy place to be with. Maybe I got lucky, the people that I met, but that was one thing that struck me. So as you think back about your journey and the path that you've been on, is there a particular moment that you feel shaped your approach to leadership or got you involved in lean in a particular way?
Yeah, we all have an aha moment in our career. And early in my career as an application engineering, helping with the design product development, for me, it's all about when you have that moment, when you solve the customer problem, when you help winning the project, even one project at a time, that is a moment for me where, wow, we achieved something. And that something or outcome is not just what is in it for us. Of course, we want to grow the company, but what is in it for our customer and industry. And for me, that's where you feel the purpose of your career. It's not just about you, company, but it's also customer and industry. And that is aha moment, you know, ability for you to really define the problem, help solving the problem, and win.
I love it. I love it. I'm curious to drill into some of those moments specifically. And I know that you've worked across multiple different industries. I think it's kind of interesting because sometimes folks in their career path, like they get really involved in one industry and they tend to stay in one industry. But then when you start to move across multiple industries, you start to see patterns mm-hmm. of things that are actually really similar across a lot of industries. And it builds a lot of this like familiarity, or I don't know, just like understanding of how we're all kind of in this thing together. Yeah. We're all trying to solve similar problems. Are there some things that you recognize as principles that stay the same across all the industries?
Yeah. Let's stepping back. Let me start with a one billionaire question the CEO always asks you, no matter where you are, country, industry, market, how do you help us growing the business? A billionaire question always from the CEO, no matter who you are, what's job title, function, how do you add value to the business? How you help the business grow? And when that tie into the continuous improvement, Lean Six Sigma, there's a two things I want to highlight. And I see that across all industry, across all segmentation. Number one, you focus on value added and non-value added. Translate into the very simple term in the business, value added, something customer willing to pay. Non-value added basically is a waste, right? Things that make you inefficient, things that hold you back, time to market, development cycle. When you start having that thinking around value added and non-value added, no matter who you are, where you work, which country, etc., that's the direction that lean and continuous improvement always be here to drive your growth. And the second one, this is very interesting one, don't underestimate the cost of doing nothing different. We always talk about, oh, if we do this, we gain this, we get this, but don't underestimate. Ask a simple question. If we do nothing, absolutely nothing different today, what is the cost? What is the risk? Is it going to make customer happy? Is customers going to satisfy on when we do nothing at all? Time to market going to get faster? Are we going to lose the project or lose the revenue? So I find that always stunning. In the critical project decision-making, when people are struggling of making decision, you ask, all right, no problem, but let's stepping back. Absolutely, we do today nothing different. What is cost us? And I always, 99%, get people think. They always pause when you ask this type of question. So again, value added, non-value added, and reflection of cost of doing nothing different.
I love the conversation of value add versus non-value add. I think for anybody that's new to lean as a discipline, you know, you come across this idea of value add. And I find it's always such an interesting conversation because when somebody starts to look at their work as like non-value added or waste, it kind of hurts, you know, mm-hmm. like, so what I'm doing doesn't matter. And it's kind of this interesting like evolution that you have to go through when you actually realize that maybe a majority of your day is not necessarily value added work. How do you go through that process? Maybe you can give an example of an industry where you had to like articulate value add versus non-value add. Is there a story that you want to share with us?
Yeah, again, as a Six Sigma master black belt myself, one of the role that I always do is coaching, educating people. So when we talk about value added, non-value added, always, no matter how complex of that problem or project, refer back to something simple. For example, put yourself driving into the gas station. when you add, put the gas on your car. Value added, it's simple. If you don't do that, you will not get gas in your car, right? So what did you do? You turn off the car, open the door, you know, unlock the gas, pay, and just fill in the gas. Then you take the gas back. The receipt is an option, yes or no. So sometimes with the value added, non-value added, people forget to think because they pretty much, like you say, right? What I'm doing is that non-value added. It's a mindset. So therefore, always refer to something in your life. Simple. The year I got Master Black Belt certification, that's the year I give birth to my twin.
You have twins.
Even I apply that for when they put the formula for them, how they change the diaper, right? Put the trash can on the left or on the right. It's just sometimes you reflect to your daily life and you're going to get that understanding of what really matter to you. Value, non-value added, go all the way back to the basic daily life and then you get it.
Now, I know that this conversation of value added versus non-value added sometimes can have so many layers and sometimes there can be debates. Is there an example, you know, and again, depending on if you're working more in marketing or operations or finance, you know, like the value added steps can vary a little bit. Is there a story from one of your projects that you can relate that maybe there was a discussion or an argument about what was value added or what wasn't value added?
Yeah. Let's put in a simple, let's say one qualification of a medical device, you know, just something simple. So the value added, and I go back to what I mentioned in earlier about value added, when you look at it from the business angle, it's what customer willing to pay. Yeah, that's a requirement that they want a medical device that is FDA approval. Let's say we sell material that go into the medical device. And we, as a supplier, we always have that perspective of we have to test A, B, C, D, E so that the devices come in with the material perfectly cured, perfectly formed. But then if you look at it from value added and you reflect back from what exactly customer wants, they want some FDA approval. They want the device that is safe to touch. And you translate back to, are you really need that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 testing? Or it's only 1, 5, 7, 8. And the rest of it is nice to have, right? So again, that's a kind of key example. And what does that mean? It really helped the team prioritize the testing, understand what's a go, no go, what is absolutely required for customer to pay, right? So again, and you can use a tone down, right? The word non-value added, you can say nice to have. Maybe that's perceived better in certain stakeholder. But again, in the end, you reflect on what absolutely matter and matter for what? Matter for your customer. They're willing to pay that money for this according to this testing.
Yeah, so, I think I've heard the phrase willingness to pay. You know, not necessarily pay separately, but the willingness to pay is a good one. I'm curious. I know that at Aperion, you've done some work in like packaging type areas. And packaging is always one of those interesting ones where, you know, much expense and cost in packaging is the customer willing to pay for? This is just off script question, but I was opening a box the other day. I honestly can't even remember what it was, but I remember thinking, man, they spent a lot on this package. And I was asking myself, how much am I paying for this packaging?
I would say the packaging space is very much on, as an innovation and marketing head or hat that I have, it's really a complete art, right? Because when you look at it on the packaging space of it, what is the job to be done, right? What's the job to be done as a packaging? You have to package the product, make sure that it's secure for transportation within point A to point B. So it can simplify a lot of things, but now the complexity of the packaging, contract packaging space come in when you start having the supply chain disruption, right? How do you get your packaging? Is it offshore from China, for example? How is that tariff supply chain disrupt? So, you know, value added, non-value added, when it's in the context of packaging, the complexity is high, right? Sometimes you really need to break it down. Can you do it yourself? What complex of your packaging, what's the raw material that you get, and what's the application of it? Is it go to a food and safety, or is it just handling material? Is it on the automotive side of it? Is it oil? Is it spray? So again, the value, non-value added in the context of the packaging, I would say you have to go back to more standardization of what it is. What is your product line? Or what you try to achieve and where, point A to point B? Is it West Coast, East Coast, Central? So again, it's that's why I'm called, it's an art when it's come to packaging.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. And again, this is probably a great example of one of those many debates that can be had in an organization, because the definition of value add is rarely as clear. What's the there's a little saying that I like: in theory, practice and theory are the same, but in practice, they're not. So let's use a little example of the wrapping that goes around the thing. What is the job to be done? If I'm just buying a new phone or something, or buying anything for myself, wrapping it would not necessarily add to the value add. But if I'm going to a birthday party, or I'm going to an event or something, like, the wrapping that I put on the package is part of the experience that the person's getting, right? So that's kind of an interesting example of how in some situations packaging can have value, and in some situations, you know, maybe it doesn't. So many things in this discipline are that they exist in a tension, you know, kind of between like one way of looking at things and another. And value add is one of those that, gosh, there's just, I mean, some things are just real obvious when you get right down to it, but there can be a lot of discussion to get at it. I'm curious if there's anything that you've interacted with or experienced recently as a consumer, just in your life, that you looked at and said, that's not adding value.
This is a tricky question because, again, you know, most of the time when you look at value or non-value, it's also one thing I want to highlight, right? When you use the term consumer, right? Most of the time, customer centricity, consumer centricity come in, because value added, you need to ask a little bit further to who, right? It can be value added to us, right? As a supplier, is that value added to the consumer? Because we want to add value, we want to bring margin, you know, we want to do business in the way. But in the end of the day, one element that is interesting when it's come to consumer is that you ask it back, value added and non-value added in the end of the day to who? Is that to our customer or is that to us, right? So also that a little bit add on when you have that consumer play into the equation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know that when you get into discussions of value streams, especially when you get into like internal processes, things that just have to happen for the organization to run, you've got to take that perspective of, well, who is the customer that we're talking to? Because that's a good example. What would you say is one of the more misunderstood parts of running a high-performance manufacturing operation?
Yeah, when it's come to manufacturing, the operation, kind of key driver that we use in Six Sigma is a lean, right? And I would say one misperception of lean, when we talk in the context of manufacturing and operation, the perception is always about cost-cutting. And it's not. Lean, for me, it's about building that culture. And culture of what? Lean is a culture of problem solving and continuous improvement. And I think this is, for me, things that I want to highlight to the audience, where don't think about lean as a cost cutting. Don't think about this as a you know, cleaning and, you know, some kind of housekeeping. It's not. In the end, it's a bigger picture. It's that cultural transformation. It's about mindset shift. And I think that's the thing when it's come to misunderstanding around this Lean Six Sigma in manufacturing.
I think that's a great insight. There's a difference between a mindset and a behavior. You know, like, I think sometimes people think that this lean thing is a behavior, when really it's a mindset, and it shows up with certain behaviors, like, you know, saving some costs or something. Like, it shows up in certain behaviors. But if you think that it's just the behaviors that you're trying to replicate and you miss the mindset, you're really missing more than half the story. That's a good, I really like that. That's a great way of thinking about it. Is there an example that you want to share with us from a time when maybe a small change had a really outsized impact?
Let's look at it. I give example of the medical device. Let's go to electronic, maybe pivot a little bit on electronic manufacturing. Standardizing is one of the key small adjustments when you come to manufacturing of like consumer electronic, etc. And when you assembly the electronic component together, standardizing, optimizing the curing time. It is a big, big, big shift on how we gain more yield. And small thing, curing time, you know, sometimes in seconds, sometimes in minutes. But when you look at it from stepping back and look at it from the bigger picture, right, it saved millions. And that's a small example where people think about curing time, oh, small thing. Once you optimize the curing time, my goodness, the throughput, that yield and that cost that you get in the end is, it's in the million can be, right? It depends on how much of the project. So that's, for me, at the time, you know, it's a very good example of the small, small adjustment. It can scale into $1 million, the $1 million impact.
I'm super curious about that example. So was there like a problem with scrap or yield in that scenario?
Yeah, because in consumer electronic, it requires so many components in the circuit board, right? So think about if you have, let's put in a simple way, one component can be 10 pieces of thing that you have to put together, right? And it's go by module to module to put the part one, part two, part three together. And when you start optimizing the curing on the part one, then the part two that come in and you put it together, it get optimized. So, you know, you get multiplier on what's a small curing time that you have, right? Because it's synchronized of how we put the module together. So the timing and optimization of that curing, it's become important when you look at from the end component standpoint.
Yeah. So when you say curing time, and again, I'm not an expert in medical device manufacturing. I've walked through a few floors and seen some things, but I'm kind of picturing like...
You need to put things together, stick it together.
The soldering, like soldering parts together.
Yeah, the glue, the special glue that make it stick together. Sometimes you need to put some potting material. Sometimes you need to put some, you know, sealing around the component, and everything required a curing.
And when you say curing time, so it sounds like there's a time where that part, when you're done working on it, needs to like sit before the other things are done to it.
Yeah, so make
sure it's kind of like if you put paint on a wall two coats too closely together, like it messes up the first one. So you know what's so funny? Again, we're kind of on this theme of how similar this discipline is across industries. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who digs holes, basically, mm-hmm. right? Like foundations and holes for buildings and builds roads and stuff. And he was telling me about a mistake that somebody had made where they had dug the hole, they had put the, the different layers in that they have to put, but they didn't wait long enough for the earth to settle and the mm-hmm. rain to fall. And, you know, like, and it was so interesting how now that I hear what you're saying and I hear his example, I'm like, oh, he had like a curing time problem. They didn't wait long enough for the one step to happen before they did the second step. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I love that that's one of those examples that probably so many people can relate to in their different industries. And knowing that that's even a thing that you need to pay attention to sometimes might not be obvious. That's a really good example. I know that a lot of people that we work with at KPI Fire, scrap reduction is usually one of the things on their radar in their manufacturing processes. So it's interesting to hear how somebody had an insight, and sometimes those insights can apply to completely different industries in ways that we don't even realize on this. Is there a lean tool or a principle that you see is often misapplied or just misunderstood?
I mentioned briefly earlier about this, right? About 5S get misperception around housekeeping. And when you look at 5S, it's so simple, it so makes sense, and it apply everywhere, right? You know how you organizing your folder, even on the emails, right? And when it comes to project management, no matter sales, marketing, you know, chemist, how do you organize yourself, right? And that's, for me, it's embedded into the principle of 5S. It's go beyond just the perception around, oh, 5S again, the housekeeping, you know. And I think that's, if you ask me, number one misperception of the two, 5S is there. And 5S for me, the value is very comprehensive. You can use it everywhere, anywhere you go, right? It's so simple, makes sense, and it's very straightforward. You don't need training for 5S. You just need to lead by example and bring that face into your daily life, right? That's why, you know, the KPI Fire 2, I really like that structure too, because sometimes it gives you that visual to understand how you can really organize what is important, bring some sense of urgency, and that's connected well with some simple tool like 5S from the concept standpoint. Yeah.
So, on this podcast, I like to explain or elaborate acronyms and things that we get into. For anybody that might not be familiar with 5S, how would you explain 5S just briefly to someone?
Sure. So first, you just put the perspective, the simple term, like when you sort things out, right? You shine something, make it shiny, make it cleaner. You standardize a certain aspect of your daily life. You set in order, right? How does that get into the order? Is it order number one? You do this one after you finish this, then you follow with this, you know, put in order, sort things out, can be color-coded, what's urgent, not important, you know, nice to have, non-value added. The prioritization can be something from color-coded. This is from customer. This is maybe from your client. So, and in the end, how do you sustain it? Right? How do you, last S, right? Sustain, you can audit your work. You can go back and say, hey, last month, do I organize myself well? You know, do I need some adjustments? So that's a very simple application of 5S. Sort things out, set in order, standardize, shine, and sustain. Again, it can be different interpretation, but that's how I apply in my daily life in a simple term.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those principles that can apply everywhere. It's, I mean, basically just things that are more organized are usually easier to work with. If you can find the tool that you need when you need it. Uh-huh. If you can find the keys when it's time to leave your house, that's usually better than wondering where they're at, for example. That's a great example. When you're introducing Lean to folks that aren't familiar with it, do you have like a go-to or a first move that you turn to?
When you introduce this type of concept, Lean, Six Sigma, continuous improvement, you know, and we all have a project team, the stakeholder to deal with, the most important step is listen.
Listen.
Listen to what? Listen to where they come from, because remember, things always happen with some reason behind. And, you know, listen to why it's happened the way it's happened today. And the most important when you have a active listening skill is that you understand what drive that. What are the pain points? And when you start having that understanding of the pain point, that validation, that relationship come in. And remember, the ownership start when the people feel that the voice is heard. Soft skill, but Keith, very important. Listen. Right? Listen to understand, not listen to response. We have a tendency to listen and start formulating how we're going to respond to that. But stepping back, listen to understand. Remember, once they feel that their voice is heard, they will have that ownership and enjoy the journey with you.
Again, that's another one of those principles that conceptually it's so easy for us as humans to be like, oh yeah, of course I should listen. Mm-hmm. And we all know that. But it's one of those things with, I think any good practice worth devoting your energy to as a human to get better in, it has this layer of complexity where it's almost like the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. This idea of being a good listener, man, like knowing versus doing, it's always, it's one of those things that I'm sure even if you're really good at it, you can always get better at it.
It requires so much practice, Keith. I mean, we all live in the society and the social way of responding. We just have a kind of the courage and the excitement. Oh, I know this. I want to share this. Oh, but have that discipline of listen. Just listen. Listen to understand. Ask the right question. So again, I bring it up because like you say, simple, easy to say than done.
On that topic, I'm curious, do you have like a go-to question or one that you like to use when you're, you know, maybe you're new in an environment and you're getting to know people? Are there like a question that you like to use to extract that kind of information?
Yeah, I use this all the time. What problem are we trying to solve? Remember, the problem well state is a problem half solved. Spend some time asking about the problem. Apply 5 whys. Now we have another tool coming in, right? So spend some time, understand the problem, understand the dynamic, what drives that problem. Because if the more you spend time, remember, 50% just put the problem statement together very well, you solve 50% of the problem. So that's why for me, one of my favorite, you know, my philosophy of the question is, what problem are we really trying to solve?
I love that question. That's a great question. That's a terrific one. So again, you know, with all the pressure on the CEOs saying, I want business results, with there's so much of this like learning and understanding and culture stuff that we want to try to, you know, get. How do you balance the hard needs of the business with things like building culture?
Yeah. For me, the key secret sauce when it's come to culture transformation with this, it's about quick win. Small is the new big. And this is so true, right? Of course, you have your North Star. You have a big, clear vision of your big goal. But just remember, building a small, quick win, it's not just bringing the dynamic of empowerment of your team, encouraging that the tool, the processes that we use is working. And the third one, when you deal with executive, of course, the patient might not be there. But when you have this quick win, especially more than one or two times, you can show so-called direction. Mr. Executive, look, we have this 2-3 quick win, 2-3 data point to show we are heading to the right direction. And that's most of the time you can buy patience from executive. So again, don't underestimate, small is a new big.
That's a great quote. Small is a new big. That's a good one. This, I mean, quick win probably is intuitive. It probably makes sense just on the words. But in terms of process improvement, give us an example of what you're referring to when you say a quick win.
Yeah. So the quick win can be from the hard factor and the soft factor, right? So of course, the hard factor, the hard facts is easy. The quick win, when you start seeing progression or progressing of maybe the cycle time, number of the yield improvement, number of the waste reduction. So the hard facts is clear, right? And when it's put into the context of continuous improvement, you can put into the graph as a key visual that the trend is there, right? But when it's come to the soft fact, it's also pretty much about stakeholder buy-in, stakeholder management, stakeholder engagement, right? So when it's come to the quick win, not necessary to go to a clear black and white. It can be simple things like, wow, the sales guy talked to our customer and put the quote of our customer and say, so-and-so, the fact that you have this project, this progress, and, you know, it satisfies certain people in the organization. That can be a quick win. And remember, the voice that comes from our customer is the loudest one that we can show to the organization.
Would it be fair to say that most things that qualify as a quick win are things that don't usually require any extra budget and things that usually the people closest to the situation are like, oh yeah, that's obvious. We should totally do that.
Yeah, definitely. And remember, you know, when it's come to continuous improvement, it's not about million of dollar investment in CapEx. It can be some incremental cultural shift that we can show into the organization as a quick win. Of course, if you win the project, if you get significant number of incremental improvement, that's also there, right? But remember, just put as an art. Some soft factor can drive so many things.
So how do you go about coaching managers and supervisors in the organization to become leaders of improvement rather than just task managers?
I'm coaching the team all the time about asking the right question. It's not about telling them what to do. It's about empowering the team to lead by curiosity, not by command. When the accountability of the mindset shift of how they're looking at the problem, how they start not jump into the conclusion, but understanding, apply, ask themselves five times, five whys, right? Why? And once they have a clarity of the problem, they solve half of the issue, right? So having that coaching for them to start asking the question, not just giving an answer. We as a Six Sigma practitioner here, we know the answer, right? We have the tool, but having that coaching ability to stepping back, let them see the problem by themselves, let them figure it out, the tool, and it's no right or wrong. Having them have ability to see the dynamic of that certain problem asking the question and let them have a more curiosity of that culture. And that is how I see the coaching of continuous improvement Lean Six Sigma in organization. Encourage asking the question.
This episode is brought to you by KPI Fire, the all-in-one platform for continuous improvement. With KPI Fire, you can align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people. So whether you're leading a team or driving enterprise-wide change, KPI Fire helps you deliver real results. Learn more at www.kpifire.com. Do you find, again, organizations exist at all different levels of evolution and along the spectrum of continuous improvement, but let's say somebody who is maybe a smaller organization and they don't even really know about this. Somebody in the organization is going to have to kind of like say, hey, we want to get involved in this. And as an organization grows, one thing that I see as a debate sometimes with continuous improvement is, should we have dedicated resources to push this continuous improvement thing? Or should it just be something that we expect from all of our leaders to do all of the time? Maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's not a black and white. Of course, ideally, especially when you're at the early stage of applying continuous improvement, right, you need some so-called specialist who certify understanding how to use the tool, use the Minitab, all kind of the tool, including KPI Fire, right? Where when do you have that specialist come in, bring a quick win to show the organization that continuous improvement is working in an organization. Once you have that proof point, then it needs to be embedded into the organization, regardless of the function, you know, from the top down, bottom up. So I see in the long, long term, continuous improvement have to be a part of that culture. And at some point, continuous improvement in the next 10 years, I see a huge shift from manufacturing shop floor to sales, marketing, innovation. So that is how I see that it have to be transitioned into be a part of that company culture for you to have that sustainable growth. Otherwise, bringing in specialists, when they leave the project, it's done. And there's no sustainable of how people continuously using that tool in the organization.
So with Aperio, when you guys go in and work with a company, are you going in and like helping them set up the culture? Or are you going into like work specific problem areas and projects? Maybe you could give an example of
most of the time.
The perspective here is, again, our audience is in companies at different sizes. And some people are probably thinking, God, we really want to have more of this happening in our company. Mm-hmm. Do I need to have a full-time person on my staff that does this? Or maybe I can hire a consultant. I'm kind of curious if you could just give us a perspective on how you guys have seen that.
So I go back to a billionaire question from the CEO. How do you help them grow the business? And that is our starting point, right? Start from that client, let's say client drive back to us, where in the end of the day, continuous improvement, Lean Six Sigma is embedded into how we do the business. And when you reflect into not about continuous improvement, not about just business, but you apply it all together, right? Go into your client. How do we help you grow the business? How easy of your sales? How we can help you improve your efficiency, your profit margin? And again, this is a business language, Keith, but in the end, it's continuous improvement, right? You make it more efficient, you eliminate the waste, you know? So when you come to consultancy area, in the end, it's all about driving the growth of our client. Regardless of your scale of the business, your revenue, right? You want to have more efficiency in your operation. You want to have more effectiveness, even in your sales process, right? So it doesn't matter manufacturing or into the marketing and sale, we all apply the same concept.
Again, I just keep coming back to these themes that are part of continuous improvement. It's really similar, the work to be done, whether you're talking about how to improve the way you're painting parts in your manufacturing facility, or whether you're trying to improve your sales and marketing function, or whether you're trying to improve your back office finance, source to pay, you know, all kinds of processes. It's very similar. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, do you have a favorite KPI, key performance indicator, that you would use to determine if an organization is really improving?
I love this question. And if I reflect back and pick, I mean, it's hard to pick one, but if I have to absolutely pick one thing, I pick the first past yield.
first pass yield? Like first right, time, because, right? First pass yield.
Yeah. Do it right the first time or first pass yield, right? Where basically it's indicate that if you have that for the first time right, the rest of it will follow. And that's go back to the conversation we have about problem statement, right? Spend time on understand what it is, because if it the problem well stated is half solved. Same thing, if you do it right at the first time, the rest of it, it seems to be easier to follow. So that will be my KPI that I love. It's, you know, in my, I'm passionate about it a lot, where you spend a lot of time, make it right the first time, and believe it or not, the rest of it will follow.
I'd like to drill down on that just a little bit. I love that metric, first time right, great quality metric. What are some things that you've experienced that are, you know, kind of thinking like Pareto reasons, like reasons that might not be going right? What are some things that you found that could cause a poor first time right?
Yeah. Most of the time it's coming from the alignment of the requirement. Let's put example of the project, right? We have a project with our client, our customer. First time right, what does that mean? It can be simple thing like customer require 1 to 8. But we put the requirement from 5 to 12. It's not the right the first time, just the alignment of the project definition, right? So again, the food right the first time is go beyond just the output. It's go into the process, right? Where are we really listening on the requirement? Is that what they need? And remember, is that the needs and how they measure it, right? Customer can say easy to clean, that this is a good one. I want easy to clean product, right? For us as a supplier, easy to clean, what we translate into viscosity, for example, right? The lower viscosity, easy to clean. Is that get clarified upfront? Are you doing it right the first time when you talk to the chemist to develop the product easy to clean? How do you translate that customer needs into the development requirement? Are you doing it right the first time? When you say the viscosity low, how low is low? You see the dynamic where when I'm saying about do it right the first time, it's require a lot of work and preparation. But this is a very, I mean, again, it's a funny thing. Another example is when we do a 3D printing, right? Customer love the black. This is a very funny story because they do a lot of prototyping. They have a lot of selfie on the part that 3D printed, right? And the customer love the black. And then we, you know, industrial product, we do the black and it's a matte black. It's not the industrial black because when you do the selfie, it's have a fresh light. So again, just the color of black. We understand it right. It's a black in which way, right? So that's a simple example, you know, do it right the first time. Are you really do it right? That is meeting expectation on both. Are you translate that needs into what exactly have to be done?
That's such a good, I mean, that's a lesson that I personally learned so many times is one of the hardest things to make anything go smooth is to have mm-hmm. the clarity up front of what you want, you know, mm-hmm. in the expectations. And that can create, initially, it can create some back and forth when you have to go to your customer and say, well, what exactly do you want? And being able to recognize when you have a set of requirements that are unclear, like you said, hey, what color do you want? I want black. Well, do you want gloss black or matte black or industrial?
Yeah, black.
Like, yeah, you have to have a certain amount of experience with the process to even know what questions to ask. I think that's, again, another one of those lessons that is so relevant to so many different industries. So with a focus on motivating people to do their best and improving, do you have like a secret to keep that happening consistently?
Yeah. And this has come in with an element around generation as well, right? When you look at the workplace, our client, our industry, they start having a lot more shift of the new generation coming in, right? So when you talk about motivating people, I think it's important that we need to take it to the perspective of the generation mixed. But in the end of the day, motivating people, I always start with the dynamic question of why. Why? Why is this important to you? Why are we doing this, right? Instead of telling them this is a goal, we want to grow the sale by this, but why? Because it will help this business unit, you know, so-and-so, help our customer. This is a new key project for them to win. Remember, leadership that drive empowerment with the purpose of why have more sustainable growth and motivating the team than just telling them about what. So remember, and again, it's not easy, right, to find the why. Why? What's drive that? What's the purpose on doing that as a team? Of course, the individual why might be easy, right? They want to come has a stability of work. They want to have promotion. But when you put into the context from the team, from the project interface with your client, your customer, reflecting that why, right? What's the purpose why we're doing this together? And that have a lot more deep or depth of the relationship building. So that, you know, will be my, let's say, my philosophy of the leadership. You know, you start with why and let the purpose.
What are some examples? First of all, how do you ask that question? Who do you ask it to? And then, like, what are some examples of answers that you get back to that question?
Yeah. So let's start from interpersonal, right? When you sit down with a team, right? You ask them, how do you see themselves in this role, right? How do you see your work make an impact to our customer? Why do you think it's important? Right? And have that ability when they say something, make sure you repeat in their own language, right? Make sure that, remember, go back to they will be involved and take ownership when the voice is heard, right? Asking this why, make sure that you're understanding what drive that behind, what motivate them, why are you doing this, right? And have that understanding why we're doing this as a team, as an individual, as an organization. Right. As an organization, might be straightforward. We want to grow. We want to have more profit so that, you know, we can have certain, you know, growth in the market. When we do with the customer, why are we doing it with the customer? Because we want to grow. Right. Have that purposeful understanding of why that drive interaction will be the most helpful.
It's a good example. It almost sounds to me like you're getting it like a mission statement or a North Star, even at the department level. Like, what's the purpose of our department or what's the purpose of our function? It's interesting. So we all know that all this stuff is like great in theory and yeah, we want to improve. But then you and I, we get off the podcast and the phone rings and the fires start. How do you keep people focused on this improvement stuff or the big picture when they've got all these like daily fires burning?
Yeah. So first of all, learn to acknowledge, right? We live in the corporation, we have a career, we have life. Thing is not straightforward, right? So I think it's important for the leader, and most of the time it's mislead for the leader to just ignore, right? To acknowledge that, yeah, there's a firefighting. There's some last minute request from our customer that you have to do today, right? But remember, ability to set the long-term goal and be able to acknowledge what's going on short term. It's important for the team that they don't lose sight what's a big picture that they have to strive for. But as a leader, learn to acknowledge. Just don't say sorry. Don't say it's a mistake. Whatever it is, acknowledge. Look, it's life. We have to balance what's in front of us. But guys, don't forget, we have a North Star. We have a long-term goal that we have to achieve. So having that balance of acknowledging things happen, but keep that big picture, long-term focus with a long-term goal.
Yeah, that's good. Is there a lesson that you learned in your leadership journey that you felt like maybe you would have liked to learn earlier that you could share with us here?
Yeah. As you grow and become a leader, and the leader doesn't mean that you have to have a direct report, right? The leader can be you leading the team, you leading the project, you know, leading the group that interface with the customer, also called leader, right? And what I learned early enough in my career is that you can't do everything yourself. As a leader, if you want to have a multiplier on your result, learn to empower others. Bring them into the journey. You know, it's just like when you go fast, you go alone. But if you want to go fast and go far, you go together.
I think that's such a good lesson. I think when the list of things that you want to accomplish and do grows beyond what you're able to accomplish on your own, you realize you need other people on this journey. That's a great insight. Okay, let's move into call this the rapid fire section. These are just kind of some, they don't have to be one word or short sentence, but just kind of quick question, short answer, basically.
Sure.
The most important job of a leader is to blank.
Empower, simplify, and deliver.
I like that, deliver. Do you have a favorite go-to problem-solving tool from the Lean Toolbox?
Yes, and yes, value stream mapping. This is my number one tool that I've been using, and the value stream mapping, why it's so good? Because it captures the visualize of the material flow, the communication flow, the process behind. It's defined the bottleneck, the west, and believe it or not, value stream mapping, you present to operator in the floor, you present to the CEO, you can use one page. They all understand the same way. Value stream mapping.
I love value stream mapping. I often will tell people that flowcharts are my love language. So if you want to communicate to me, show me a picture. Is there a book that you recommend that you might want to share with us?
Yeah, this is, I think, old book, The Toyota Way by Jeffrey Licker. Always a classic book. And I just love how they, you know, kind of connecting between the culture and the process and the continuous improvement. So highly recommend it.
That's a great one. Definitely. Okay, this is another finish the sentence one. Continuous improvement is?
Mindset, not the project.
Mindset. I love it. That's great. I think that's such a key insight, is it's really a mindset, not just a set of tools or a behavior that you need to do occasionally. I'm a student and a scientist of questions, you might say. Is there a favorite question or maybe a few favorite questions that you really like to use as your go-tos?
I go back to the one that we can have a conversation earlier. What problem you try to solve? Remember, problem well state is problem half solved.
I love that one. That's such a good one. If you could give a leader like a mantra, a short something to live by, what would it be?
As a leader, you need to learn first to listen, and listen to understand, not listen to respond. Then you can simplify the problem and be able to empower your team to deliver the result.
I love it. That's a great one. Tell us something that you are excited or fired up about.
I would say outlook 5-10 years from now, the digitalization, the AI come in. If we can really marriage this digital tool into the continuous improvement, and that's going to be a magic game changer. I can't wait to see. And it's coming, I'm sure.
Oh, that's wonderful. Is there a prediction that you'd like to make about the future of continuous improvement right now? What are some big things that you think might change in the next 5 or 10 years?
And it's going to change in the next 10, even 5 years from now, is that continuous improvement, Lean Six Sigma, go beyond just a shop floor talk. It's go beyond manufacturing. It's going to get into sales, marketing, and innovation.
Yeah, we definitely believe that same thing. I hope that to be the case as well. So this has been such a great conversation. You've got such a good energy, and I love your enthusiasm about continuous improvement. It's been really fun to have a conversation with you. For anybody that's curious about Perion and what kind of work you guys do, like what kind of companies do you work with? What kind of projects might you be interested in? If somebody's looking for some help, what kind of stuff would be a good fit for you guys?
Sure. We like to call ourselves Aperia as a specialty consultancy, and we provide a consultant specialized in the B2B packaging chemical industry, and we help a lot of our clients grow the business. With a platform that we have commercial excellence, innovation excellence, and the business excellence. So if you're looking for somebody to come in and be a part of your journey and help you grow, think about Aperia.
Well, Cindy, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast here today. I'm so grateful for you spending the time with us and joining us and just sharing some of your wisdom with us. It's been really enjoyable and fun for me. And for anybody that's listening to us here, if you want to suggest a guest or ask a question, you can find me on LinkedIn. I suppose they can find you on LinkedIn, probably. Is that the best way to reach you? You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find Cindy on LinkedIn. Cindy, do you want to spell your last name for us here just so that...
you can find me Cindy, CindyDeekitWong, DeekitWong, my last name.
DeekitWong, wonderful. And I'm Keith Norris, of course. And this concludes this episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If you have enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow us on the socials, share the podcast, drop us a little comment, go ahead and give us a little like or a comment. We We love to hear about things you liked in the episode. That's always fun. And please share this with anybody that you know that's as passionate about continuous improvement as you are, somebody that you think might have that little spark, somebody who might be interested in this discipline. And yeah, check us out wherever you find the podcast. Until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.